Hey everyone, welcome back to Fungible Times. We are so excited to have Mike Demaret, co-founder of Rainbow, the beautiful mobile crypto wallet with over 50% month-on-month growth in users. You can find him at imhiring.eth or just send him crypto there. And we're going to start us off by reading some Rainbow reviews that we found recently and love. My personal favorite is Rainbow Saved My Marriage. 5 stars by Bryson91 from November 16th. This is for version 1.5, so everybody who worked on that, congratulations. My wife was going to leave me until I showed her the Rainbow wallet.
A glowing review, that's awesome. So my favorite review was this one, Rescued from Darkness, 5 stars, of course. So dramatic reading, this is a little bit of a story time here. As I stared into the endless darkness of Web 2, lonely, alone, bored with hypertext transfer protocol, a bright light caught my eye. I tried to make my way towards the light, but as I moved closer, it started dispersing in different colors. I couldn't make out what to do, but every color of it made me think of lives I haven't yet lived, and before I could make a decision, I was engulfed in the colors of a rainbow, standing at the end of the tunnel with an ETH address ready to dive into Web 3. That is awesome. Those are just some fun reviews, obviously, that your very happy customers have left you in your apps in the App Store for Rainbow Wallet, which is the topic of today's podcast. We're so excited to have you on, Mike. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you, Sarah.
Thank you, Christine. I'm excited to be here with the Fungies.
Yes, welcome, Fungies, back to another episode. So for our first episode, or for our first section of the episode, we'll kick it off. Our first section is called Explain Crypto to Me Like I'm 5. We'll just ask a couple of series of questions where you can explain what Rainbow does and your backstory for audience that might be new to Rainbow and crypto wallets in general. So the first question here is, what is a crypto wallet?
Great question, Christine. A crypto wallet, well, let's think about it. A crypto wallet is kind of like a Pokedex. If you all know what a Pokedex is, but you know, from the Pokemon universe, but think about a crypto wallet as, yeah, crypto wallet is kind of a new product category, but really, yeah, it's kind of analogous to a Pokedex, where really what it is kind of like, you know, your little, palette of internet currencies, right? Like it's this like little pouch, right, that you can store your digital goods in. Right now, the most popular digital goods are essentially different types of money and what are called non-fungible tokens, like NFTs, things like digital collectibles, video game items, etc. Can also include things like identities as well.
I'm getting flashbacks to Pokemon on my Game Boy. What color version did you play?
It's a good question. I don't even remember. I'm not going to lie.
All of them. The rainbow. Obviously.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
No, transparent purple. There was one correct answer, guys.
Yo, I don't know. I mean, I think that there's the Pokedex analogy, and then there's also, I don't know, there's this other game called Fallout 3. Y'all don't really seem like Fallout 3 players, but there's also a similar thing there called the Pip-Boy, where it's just like, you know, it's like, imagine if you're in a video game, right? And you have like your character like goes to check their inventory of like all the stuff that they've collected, right? That is kind of what I think of a crypto wallet as. Like, you know, it's like your digital inventory that you can kind of carry around with you on the internet. Right now it's like, you know, mostly, it's kind of like, it feels like it's not that far off from like Web 2. But what it actually enables is the whole, you know, concept of the metaverse that people like talking about. But this idea that you can have digital items that are, you know, interoperable and, you know, compatible across applications, across games, et cetera.
Okay, well, I'm super offended that you think that I'm still stuck in Vault 101 and never got my Garden of Eden creation kit, Mike, just because I look like what I do. But I do think that, like, this idea that, you know, I think one of the really interesting things about thinking about it as game inventory is that, like, it's hard for people to grok because they've never owned anything on the internet before, right? So, like, what do you mean by, like, what am I gonna... what am I going to own? And they understand the idea of owning inventory in games. but now it's for the entire internet. Yeah. Which is cool.
Well, I feel left out because I have no idea what you just said, Sarah, all those words.
I think Sarah was impressing upon me that she is a Fallout player.
I'll have to get into this game. Homework for me.
Fallout's a good game. Check it out.
Yeah. So what are some maybe misunderstandings people have about wallets that, you know, maybe people that are new to crypto, what are some, misunderstandings or things that are hard for them to understand about how wallets work today?
Let me think. There's a couple of things that I think are not necessarily intuitive for people who first start to use a wallet. I think one of the things is just the concept of gas in these blockchain networks. It's not entirely intuitive in the beginning, but I think that users pick up on it pretty quickly. And I think it is an important concept to learn. I think that when gas, right, basically these blockchain networks, for every transaction that is sent across the network, you have to pay a fee, a small fee. And that fee is variable based on essentially like the current network demand, very similar to the way that Uber works and the way that Uber surge pricing works. So that's a little bit, I guess, like it throws people off in the beginning. I'd say the most, the biggest thing I think that users don't understand about wallets is the portability of their wallet and really kind of like what their wallet actually is. So what I mean by that is people think that MetaMask is their wallet or Rainbow is their wallet, when in reality, MetaMask and Rainbow are actually just interfaces that take in a private key that you give it and then displays your wallet contents. But the reason I'm even saying this, right, is because what users are not aware of is how easy it is to actually import their wallet from MetaMask into Rainbow or from Rainbow into MetaMask, or just this idea that users are actually, by having, their secret seed phrase or secret recovery phrase, right? That secret phrase is their money and they're actually able to pick it up and carry it with them across products, right? So essentially users don't even realize how portable it is and how much they're not locked in to the current products that they're using.
Yeah, that makes sense. It's interesting because I think it's less of a wallet as an account or a bank account, which we kind of tie these mental models to wallets. I have a debit card and I can now go spend. That might be like the old school TradFi analogy for this. But in reality, your assets are on the blockchain and wallet is really just your utility gateway for how you interact with decentralized apps or NFT projects of the various sorts. So it's a very good way to explain that.
My mental visual model is that like there's a giant tree of lockboxes and I hold the key to my lockbox on this giant tree that holds everybody's lockboxes and I can make my purse look however I want.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely think that that's one of the things that is hard to explain to people. I honestly think that it's easier to explain just, for Bitcoin than it is for Ethereum. I think that if you can explain to someone, for example, that, hey, your Bitcoin is actually not in your wallet. Your Bitcoin is always sitting in the same place it was on the blockchain. Your wallet is simply the keys letting you access that Bitcoin that has been sitting there the whole time. And it's just an easier, story to tell for Bitcoin, just because it's like a simpler system. Yeah. But yeah, I totally agree. I think that's a good way to think about it, Sarah.
Or I just like bags. Yeah. Sorry, go ahead, Christine.
Sarah just wants a tree full of purses with locks on them. Tree full of Birkins.
Give me your keys, actually. Don't do that. Never give anyone your keys. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So, that's another aspect of, of wallets that users are not, I guess, completely, it's becoming increasingly, apparent that users are not really aware of the responsibilities that that they have as by holding their assets in a non-custodial manner. Something that Rainbow takes really seriously. And it's like something that we think that can be combated both through, you know, technical solutions, as well as it's actually just being a design and, you know, education problem. But, you know, we're confident in the future of that.
Yeah, and that's a good actually question I have for this segment of Explain to Me Like I'm Five. How would you explain seed phrases and what custodial means, and why as users should we care about those things and be informed on how to be responsible owners and actors?
It's very important that you understand that if a user wants to use a crypto wallet, it's very important that they understand the responsibilities that comes with that. I think that, I think the way to frame it is, so crypto is what's called a bearer asset. And what a bearer asset is essentially something that you own that, like whoever has it in their hands is the owner of that thing, right? An example of that is like cash, right? So if you have the $50 in your hand, it's yours. But if you lose that $50, right? There's no one you can go to say, hey, you know what? I just lost that $50. Can I get that back? Right. Because the concept of a bearer asset is it's like literally like there's no, you know, other counterparty who can, do anything for you. I kind of forget the initial question, Christine.
What is custodial? What does custodial,
okay, yeah, yeah,
custodianship mean here?
Yes. So what a custodial wallet is something like, you know, Coinbase or Binance, I don't even know what else even is there. A custodian, Anchorage, et cetera. What these are is essentially service providers, businesses that are in, they're in the business of custodying funds for customers. And that might appeal to a certain demographic, right? So, instead of taking on the responsibility of custodying these assets yourself and the associated risks, it's like maybe you have no confidence in yourself and you're gonna mess it up and you're gonna lose all your money, whatever. That's why some people decide to keep their funds with a custodian. But that often actually dramatically limits, the activities that you can partake in the ecosystem. So what a non-custodial wallet is you, the user, have complete control of the keys that control your money, right? Essentially, what non-custodial means is essentially like you have cash in your hand, right? Like that. I was saying before. And what that, that's actually really powerful. And there's a lot of benefits to doing that. So a couple of great things about, non-custodial wallets. One is that there's like no company or central party that can do any, can mess with your funds, right? So imagine, it's like some big mega corp out there, right? Like decides that your name, is similar to some other bad guy's name, right? Oh, it's like, oh man, and it's like your account gets flagged and all of your money can get frozen over there on some centralized exchange. And you gotta like deal with their customer support, all this garbage, right? Whereas with a non-custodial wallet, there's like literally nothing, like only the holder of those keys can do anything with those funds. And you are the only holder of those keys. So that's a benefit just purely from like a resiliency kind of like, I don't know. It's like personally, I hate dealing with customer support. Like I hate like the idea of like some megacorp like kind of like fumbling something and messing up my day. So I really value that. But beyond that, it's about the complete like flexibility and freedom to use your crypto assets however you would like and wherever you would like. What I mean by that is, a lot of the fun stuff that people are talking about in the world of Web3 or DeFi or whatever, these experiences are things that you actually have to, the only way to use them is via a non-custodial wallet, simply because it's like the big, megacorps out there who are doing custodian solutions, they are like, it's almost nearly impossible for them to add integration after integration after. It's like it's almost impossible for custodians to keep up with the ecosystem. So it's like the only way to actually play with this stuff is to be using a wallet yourself.
Yeah, it's almost like one way I like to think about it is like, okay, you have a car. Do you drive it yourself? You have all the freedom, but you also have all the risk and liability.
Yes.
Or do you have a driver? And obviously, yes, you can be much more limited in where you get to go, only certain hours. And so I think, you know, there's pros and cons of both a custody and a non-custodial wallet. And so
I'm very confident.
What you're trying to use them for is the name of the game here.
Yes. I'm very confident that everyone watching this is fully capable of, you know, being a responsible non-custodian wallet holder, right? It's actually very simple. You just need to know some basic things. You can go to like learn.rainbow.me, and we have a bunch of really amazing content that's written, you know, in a, you know, really like, you know, welcoming human voice, right? That explains all of the things that you need to know. But yeah, it's definitely something that your average, you know, the average people can totally do.
That's awesome. So if you guys are looking to learn more about Rainbow or to get started, there's some great, sounds like there's some great educational and onboarding resources there.
Or you can be like me and just give all your cash to Christine to spend for you.
I will accept that as well. So last question of this section before we move on to our next, maybe you could spend a minute or two talking about why Rainbow is different from other non-custodial wallets up there.
So let me think. I don't know. I mean, so Rainbow is different for a number of reasons. I'd say first and foremost, it's just our focus and passion for user experience and design. I think that the way that we've been thinking about what the ideal wallet looks like has been, I guess, a little bit different than most other products, you know, and it has been from the beginning, right? So it's like Rainbow in the beginning was the first wallet to actually ship NFT support, where treating NFTs as like first-class citizens, right? And that was actually at the time, you know, people in the industry thought it was really dumb of us to put any resources at our time into supporting NFTs because they weren't obviously, you know, it wasn't obviously like, you know, something that would be popular. So I think that what makes us different is honestly just like that we're, you know, rethinking what a wallet should be from first principles. And as, you know, rethinking what a wallet should be as, you know, coming from the perspective of being heavy, you know, users of Web3 and DeFi and the NFT ecosystem. So we're really trying to like solve our own problems. I don't know. I'd say that, you know, what makes us different? I think like, yeah, it really comes down to like design, attention to detail. I think that also I'd say that, you know, I think that Rainbow is undeniably the most fun crypto wallet, right? It's like, you know, we like to, you know, put the extra effort in there to make the product delightful in a bunch of ways. And I think that that's, you know, one of the things that people like most about Rainbow is just that it feels fun. It feels like inviting. I'd say that honestly, like it might not sound like that crazy of a differentiator, except it really is if you look at the landscape, right? You know, Rainbow compared to everyone else, it's like, you know, oh yes, obviously Rainbow's the well-designed, fun-looking one, you know?
Totally think you guys are the fun, cool sibling at the dinner party here.
We're fun, we're cool.
Yeah, I mean, I think Diplo uses Rainbow, and I mean, vibes are essentially what's driving NFTs and collectibles mm-hmm. right now. So I do think UX and delightful, fun experience goes a long way, especially for these projects that are around media and entertainment and collectibles.
Yeah, just like, you know, to talk about that for a second, I think that what's not obvious to a lot of people when they first kind of like look at the space is the way in which like from a product builder's perspective, the way that the competitive landscape rolls out, what I'm getting at is the idea that in the Web 2 world, there was this, you know, there were ways in which products and companies could create significant moats and essentially like lock their users in to their platform in ways that are a little bit mildly hostile to the user. Whereas in this Web3 paradigm, you know, I had mentioned it before, right? When a user has their seed phrase, they can actually take it and just eject from Rainbow and go use another wallet product if they prefer that one, right? So it's like literally zero friction for users to bail out of your product and start using another one, which is actually something that we love, you know, like from a user-centric like perspective. But really, that's another reason why we care so much about you know, user experience and product design, because we think that it, you know, if that is, if what I just said is true, then the only way to win in this market will be to have the best product, right? The one that actually users prefer to use, not, you know, not because they're like locked into it for, you know, it's like, oh man, it's like the first, you know, it's like a user can't get like stuck into some product just because that was happened to be the first one that they used, right? It's like, essentially use, you know, we're of the belief that users will essentially accrue to whichever product is just truly the best product. And to us, that is like all about design.
Awesome. Well, I want to be mindful of time. Sarah, do you want to kick off our next section?
Yeah, I think that's a really good segue into doing our own research, which is more about like the business model and predictions and deeper topics. You just said like, we're not here to lock users in. We have to win on the best product. How does Rainbow or how does any wallet make money?
Yeah, great question. Right now, we make a super like negligible amount of money. Like, I don't know, like 50 grand or something we made in 2021 from our fiat on-ramp integration, which, you know, we have a, you know, a feature in the app that lets you buy up to, I forget, $500 of ETH via Apple Pay. And right now that we make a small fee on those transactions. Now, we essentially hadn't even been focused on monetizing the product at all, like until recently. That being said though, how do wallets in general, what are the possible business models for wallets? Well, if you look at MetaMask, who's essentially like, you know, the large incumbent, you know, they were the first to market years ago. They have like, you know, over 10 million users. MetaMask is on track to make over $150 million in revenue this year, based on essentially by monetizing the in-app swap functionality that they have, right? So if a user makes a trade using the MetaMask interface, MetaMask then charges a fee on that. So, I mean, to be honest, right? Like that is the most obvious, like that, what MetaMask is doing is the most obvious like way to monetize. From the beginning, Rainbow has felt that, hey, you know, this, we're making an app that programmatically controls people's money. I'm certain that there's going to be ways to make money from that, right? Now, what MetaMask is doing is cool, and it's awesome that they're demonstrating, you know, the viability, but we're actually excited about other ways to monetize, right? Something we're really interested in is monetizing via MEV, if y'all are familiar with the concept of MEV. But basically, like, you know, Rainbow, so a wallet can, okay, a wallet can also be thought of in a lot of ways as an aggregator of sorts, right? Mm-hmm. You know, over time, I think that all of the ways in which a wallet can be an aggregator, like all of those verticals of the things that it's aggregating, you know, there's like, you know, revenue streams associated with each of those. Does that answer your question, or do you want to go into it? We can go into it more. I'm happy to.
Yeah, it does. I would just like to dig into that a little bit more. Like when you say a wallet can be thought of as an aggregator, can you explain that a little bit more?
Well, I guess, you know, a wallet like Rainbow can be thought of like an aggregator, and to a degree, some other wallets can as well. I mean, what MetaMask is doing with their in-app swap feature is literally being an aggregator. So it's being, what it's doing, right, is like a user types in a trade and it's actually pinging all of the other, you know, it's basically going and finding the user the best quote.
Yep.
Broadly, that same concept can be applied to other aspects of kind of the stack, right? So everything from, you know, aggregating other financial services, things like, you know, money, you know, it's like lending and borrow markets, as well as NFT auctions, right? So essentially like, yeah, so it's like, so what I mean is that if you think, you know, it's not obvious that wallets should be aggregators, but that it's actually, you know, it is undeniably in the wallet user's interest for the wallet to be an aggregator. And to be honest, it's like, you know, as much as I'm saying, oh, a wallet isn't, like, very few wallets are actually running with this right now. And it's like, you know, even now Rainbow is not an amazing example of a wallet being an aggregator, but it's like, you know, the way that we are thinking about it going forward. But yeah, I guess the reason why I think that, like, it's, you know, it's important for wallets to be aggregators, like, is, so from a user's perspective, right? Like, a user, you know, if a wallet is not aggregating the things it's integrating with, then you're actually forcing the user, or you're giving the user worse options, right? Like, yeah. The, you know, for example, in Rainbow, so I can, using Rainbow as an example, like, because right now we haven't shipped the swap aggregator feature yet. We're shipping that within a few weeks. And so currently Rainbow only has Uniswap V2 integrated. And what that means is that if you're a user and you're trying to make a trade, it only can facilitate that trade through Uniswap V2. And that has huge downsides because there's, you know, a whole bunch of assets that are perfectly, you know, reasonable assets for a user to want to buy, right? They just literally don't exist on Uniswap V2. They happen to exist somewhere else, right? So like, we're not serving that user by having a, like, you know, a dedicated, like, you know, it's just Uniswap is being integrated, right? Like, you know, you should be letting the user access whatever they want to access. Does that make sense?
It does.
Thanks for clarifying that. Okay. I want to like go in this direction of like, and I don't know if you actually think this makes sense, but like maybe we're not being as imaginative, or maybe the industry hasn't been as imaginative as to.
No, these nerds are not imaginative. None of these nerds have any imagination, Sarah, but yes, continue.
Okay.
Continue.
Okay. Then Mike, great creative nerd. Let me tell you, tell me if this is like a normal user pattern. I watch other addresses in Rainbow, import them in watch mode like they are my own, snoop my smarter friends. Like,
very elite. That's very elite of you.
What is Dom doing? Is the wallet supposed to be a social product?
Yes, it is. And we are moving towards that iteratively and while maintaining, you know, maximum optionality. So we definitely think that there's a lot of value in bringing social features to a wallet product. Man, I don't even know where to begin. Let me think. So we're iterating towards that vision by focusing on shipping an ENS registration user flow. So Rainbow will allow you to purchase ENS names and then configure the profile data associated with them, which is something that is not super common. Like most, you know, a lot of people buy ENS names now, but very few people actually fill out, you know, the metadata with them. And Rainbow is going to be, you know, giving that whole the profile editing experience like a lot of love. And we think that, you know, more and more people will add meaningful profile data. And we think that actually that getting, more adoption of those profile, like getting more people to have, profiles filled out, feels like a really great first step towards social, right? So that's how we're tackling it. Let me think. The other thing that we think is great about social here is the ways in which it can actually, really make a huge difference in education and kind of discovery for brand new users, right? So almost everybody who comes into crypto has one person in their life who, at least at least to their best knowledge, like that person, their friend, that guy knows about crypto, right? So it's like everyone, if you're new to crypto, someone in your life, you think, at least you think they know, they're an expert or something, right? So what we're really trying to do with our social, the way we're thinking about social stuff is really about how to productize that, that connection, right? Mm-hmm. Like how to essentially create connections between noobs and nerds. So that if you're a noob, right? Like, all this shit's opaque. Like, how do you know what's actually worth looking into or like playing with, et cetera. And we think the best way to actually discern that stuff is by looking at the activity of your friends. And the best way to actually kind of like then begin to, educate yourself on those things is by then talking to your friends about them, right? So instead of the user expecting that education from Rainbow, we're essentially trying to, push the noob onto their friend. It's like, hey, help your, it's like friends should help each other with this. So that's kind of how we're thinking about the social stuff, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and I think it's important too to have that because friends ultimately trust each other. It's if you can have an environment where friends can teach each other instead of just putting out all the onboarding, all the education from a centralized perspective, I think ultimately that will be healthier. But yeah, I think we just continue to be, hitting on this theme that it's more than a wallet. It's a Pokédex, it's a gateway, it's a key to all these things. It's a tree with a bunch of purses in it. But really, I feel
rainbow.
Like it's a rainbow. I feel like wallets are identities in a lot of sense. And so the thinking about the social aspect of following other profiles or having a personal space for your gallery as like a self-expression space, or just, thinking about like even messaging or chatting with other wallets, or even now with like token gated communities and DAOs, your wallet or what you hold is your way to access those communities or those social groups. There's just so many ways in which the wallet is just this interesting layer. And I think even the terminology wallet, which is the theme that we're talking about here, it goes way beyond that.
Yeah, people have been like, we should change the name. It shouldn't be called a wallet. Like that's not, intuitive or whatever. It's like, how often are you on, we call this a phone, right? It's like, is this how much of this is actually a phone? It's not really a phone. So I'm not like fixated on the word. I do think that Ethereum wallets are literally a new product category. Nothing like them has existed before. It's a new thing. It definitely like, it takes a minute to fully understand. I think that, if anyone is like not, still kind of like what the hell is going on here, like truly the best way to figure it out is to play around with like a couple $100s. That's the best way. Like there's nothing will beat just fucking around a little bit. That's like by far the best way.
What if I want to screw around a little bit on other chains? What's Rainbow's thought on Solana and other emerging ecosystems?
Good question. So yeah, I mean, coming back to one of the first things we talked about was the concept of gas fees. Gas fees are very high right now on Ethereum, Ethereum layer one. Rainbow has been working a lot on improving our layer two experience. We've recently shipped kind of this like this novel, yo, it's crazy, like this design pattern that Rainbow invented, Coinbase actually just copied it basically. So it's like it's kind of a new standard. But essentially what Rainbow does is when you see your wallet, we actually show you all of your assets across all of the different chains that you might be using, or layer two chains, all in like one merged wallet list, which I guess is, it's not obvious, but that's very different than other wallets. Most other wallets like make you switch between the networks manually and it's a mess. The reason I'm bringing that up is because, you know, we are, we're super focused on getting layer two stuff improved within Rainbow. The support today is like, you know, okay, but is going to be, have feature parity with the rest of layer one within a few months. Now, to more directly answer your question about like other chains, right? So, we're just real. So I don't really know how to answer this beyond. So we think that Ethereum is here to stay. And it has proven its ability to do that over the last handful of years. When we started Rainbow in 2019, people then, were willing to pay us lots of money to add support for various random chains to the app then. And it would have been really, looking back, it would have been incredibly stupid and a waste of time to have put any effort into some new network that is essentially starting its network effects at zero, right? Like essentially, if Rainbow is going to be one of the first wallets to support that chain, it's like, what is that actually saying, right? Like that's actually saying, hey, that network is not very viable, right? Like, Solana seems cool in some regards, right? There's like novel tech breakthroughs about Solana, but we're also essentially like, we actually think that decentralization is way more important than people understand it to be, and that basically is the only reason why this whole industry exists in the first place. If Ethereum or Uniswap could have been turned off, or if the government could have intervened, they would have, right? And concerns us about a lot of these, emerging ecosystems is kind of their untested, the resiliency in the face of government censorship is untested. And that's problematic for us. But really it comes down to like Rainbow is betting on the network effects of Ethereum. And essentially, yeah, to us, it's like all about, to that point though, right? Like it's like, all of the layer two scaling stuff happening in the world of Ethereum is, essentially bringing, all of the throughputs, fee reductions, that are happening on alternative chains that's coming to Ethereum, within the next year. Right. So, we're essentially, we're just staying focused on Ethereum right now. The actual, policy or, our actual position is that, Rainbow is, Rainbow supports, EVM chains. Yeah. So right now we haven't added the thing yet, to actually add a custom, RPC URL, to add like a custom network, but we will add that. But like, it's basically, we're essentially, applying, an opinionated kind of like, filtration over what we're essentially trying to make bets. Hey, like, will this network even exist in a year from now? And put it in spending our time accordingly, right? Because it's like not clear that some of these things will exist in a year from now, right? Like a lot of these chains that people are excited about, are being, like the activity, the user activity on those chains is like actually, you know, almost entirely the users are just there to essentially take the free money being given to them from liquidity mining incentives. And there's essentially like no differentiation between some of these chains where it's like, you know, anyway.
Long yeah, answer. We could have another follow-up topic just on this, on chains sure. and all the thoughts on there. But yeah, that was a good teaser of maybe a part two.
Sure. Oh, right now? Like, keep going?
No. Sarah, should we just do, maybe we should wrap up. I think we have time commitments. So let's see. Okay, so for our next section, we're going to just do a quick lightning round, our next and final section. So for these, just a couple quick sentences, and I'll just kind of fire up a couple questions, and then we can wrap it and say goodbye to our audience. So the first question, how did you get into crypto?
Well, I mean, I first heard about it, like, I don't know, right after high school. I didn't really care about it. I thought it was like a joke on Hacker News. I saw it on Hacker News and I thought it was like a gimmick or something. I don't know. Let me think. I don't know. I used
maybe to when did you become a believer?
When did you red pill?
Well, so, I mean, I believed in it for a long time. You know, I was, you know, buying weed on the dark net, right? With my Bitcoins. But when I actually quit my job and joined crypto full time was in early 2018, because I realized, you know, the 2017 bubble really just essentially made me like have complete conviction that this shit is never going, it's like not possible for it to go away. And that, you know, looking around, it was like a clearly, you know, there's not that many experts. So I was like, you know, I always regretted not getting involved in like iOS development early, because like, you know, it would have been a good idea. And I kind of like feel like I missed out on kind of like, you know, I could have, like I was there, but I just ignored it. Right. And I realized that, you know, I don't want to make that mistake again. I want to get involved in this thing that seems obviously a good idea to me at the time. So yeah, I jumped in.
The gen beginning. I love it. Okay. Number two, have you ever gotten rugged?
Ever gotten rugged? No, I don't think so. No.
One of the few. That's awesome. We'll have to, in part two, you'll have to give us tips and tricks for how to avoid that. Number three, is this the beginning of a crypto winter and should we all be buying coats?
I don't think so. I believe in Suzu super cycle. Okay. I think that, I think that it's, you know, this time is different, as they say. I think that, I don't know. I think that, you know, whatever, it might be a little turbulent for a minute, but I think that the boomers are not done buying because they barely understand the stuff in the first place. I think, yeah, honestly, I don't know. I could riddle off a number. I don't think it's the beginning of a crypto winter, no.
Optimistic. I love it. And The last one, what is your latest degen move, NFT purchase, whale purchase, or maybe you want to shout out a favorite new dApp that's on your radar?
Favorite dApp lately is this thing called Juicebox, juicebox.money. Big fan of that. Big fan of the people behind it, the mission, the product, the execution, everything about it. Big fan. Let me think. Latest degen move. I bought some creatures recently. Big fan of the creature NFTs.
Oh, yeah. They have Danny really cool Cole, merch.
Yes.
Yeah.
And Danny Cole is like, you know, he lives right down the street from us. Just a big fan of like, you know, the creatures.
Just in case anybody doesn't know, Juicebox is a way that you can simplistically like fundraise from a bunch of people in crypto and spend that
yes.
money. Okay.
It's how Constitution DAO. It's like the tool that they used, right, to facilitate that fundraise.
That's right. Yes.
Well, Mike, Mr. Demaray, we really appreciate having you on the show. Thanks to all the fungies who are listening in, and hope to have you back for part two.
And yes, thank you for having me. Let me know when part two. I'll be here.
Okay. So much fun. Thank you, guys. See ya.
Bye. Till next time.
It's 5:50 something and I feel so empty inside. The score.